with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Prez, a.k.a. Presidente, a.k.a. underscore Presidente on Twitter, a.k.a. in demand like John Morant's lawyer, and I'm here with Jam Hines, who you may know on Twitter, at Jam on the Boards. He's a scout for BPA Hoops. He's a contributor for Draft Digest. He's somebody who I've followed his tweets for a minute now, so I've been ready to get him on the pod, get him on Josh Strickland for a bit, and finally was able to do that to connect with my guy. Jam, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Prez. I appreciate you having me on. I love what you and everybody is doing at the Strickland, so I'm very excited and honored to be on.
But before we get started, I do have to make a few announcements. The first being that the Strickland has an Instagram. Check it out. That is at thestrick.land on Instagram. Give us a follow on there. We're posting all kinds of new content. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may or may not be watching this podcast. If you are watching it on there, please hit like and then subscribe to the channel. If you haven't already subscribed, that would be a huge help to us. The Strickland also has new merchandise, which I'm rocking right here, a piece of which I'm rocking right here. Sweatshirts. Fleece shorts, t-shirts, you name it, we got it, hats. It's all there, check it out. You can find it on our website. And then finally, the Strickland has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There is a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, this podcast that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to the Strickland mailbag that comes out every week, hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, a.k.a. the Doug Bag, alongside Dallas Amico. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. There are further tiers. There is a $9 tier that gets you access to Stricken Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave about things even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Miranda, one of the best in the business. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits, like listening on a pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, let's get started.
Yeah, you know, we just needed to make a little place we could call home for the psycho part of the internet that's called Nick's Twitter. So
you gotta love them.
It's an interesting crowd. I don't know. I had the Knicks recent, you know, with their recent win streak, by coincidence at the beginning of the streak, I wasn't watching the games live and we kept winning. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep not watching the games live. And then I finally didn't watch the Kings game live because I'm on the East Coast and it started really late on the West Coast and we lost. And I was like, okay, I can watch live again now. So I watched the Clippers versus Knicks game yesterday and I like forgot how fucking stressful and annoying it can be to watch the Knicks live. So this is, you know, like I was talking to some of the other Strickland folks in our Discord and everybody was like, it's like the 10-game win streak didn't happen. So Knicks fans are already, like, worried. And we're a sensitive bunch. We're a sensitive bunch, which is part of the reason why I do Draft Strickland, because it's inherently a hopeful, forward-looking thing, right? We're looking at the draft. We're looking at kids who are moldable, and they got high ceilings, and they're good and talented. And you know, we haven't seen them in the NBA long enough to nitpick their weaknesses like we do with, you know, RJ Barrett or Jericho Sims or whoever. So I'm really excited to get into some of these exciting players who you mentioned to me are interesting to you and who I know are interesting to some of the Knicks fans. some of the Knicks fans looking forward to draft stuff. But before we talk about particular prospects, like I mentioned, bringing us in, it is Selection Sunday. I haven't even really scrutinized the who got in, who got out, what seedings are messed up, all that stuff. I don't usually, I'm like pretty into it and I'm ready to like throw a couple bucks down on my bracket and looking at the analytics here and there and everywhere. But this year I didn't do none of that shit. So I'm just like, I'm not even going to do a bracket. I'm just going to watch this like purely as a hoop fan, stress-free, no, nothing on the line, no, nothing. But, you know, for you have, I don't know if you've got, you've had time to look at the brackets. I mean, just, I'm just looking at gut reactions right now, like Alabama as a one seed, Houston as a one seed, Kansas as a one seed. Like, I feel like usually the really good teams don't have prospects like that, but this year they do. So that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. I mean, you see that at the top with Brandon Miller and Alabama, and then, you know, Grady Dick, who we'll talk about a little bit later, with Kansas. So a lot of the, like you said, a lot of the ones and higher seeds do have legitimate first round lottery type talents.
Yeah, just going through, like, you got a couple of your classic upperclassmen kind of filled teams with high seeds like Marquette and UCLA and Purdue, of course, with giant Zach Edey. But then, like, looking after that, I mean, Baylor, they got Keontae George. Who else is high here? I'm trying to look through this. Right, UConn is a four seed with my son Jordan Hawkins, who we'll also talk about.
Yes.
Gonzaga with, I don't know if is his name Julian Strother or Julian Strother. Do you know?
I'm pretty sure it's Julian, but I could be wrong because, you know, sometimes, like, there's mispronunciations on air, like, you know, commentators may not necessarily know, or we have sometimes where you get into the draft processes and they completely change their names, or they were just saying everyone has pronounced their name wrong. Like,
that's
like, Paolo, like, even with his first name and the last name, they were just saying that people were getting it wrong. So it kind of comes with the territory, unfortunately. But we got to get it right, though.
I need an investigation into Mr. Strother as a fellow Puerto Rican. Because I know with other Latinos, it's like, do we pronounce it like the phonetic way, or do we just run with the way that our mama told us or whatever? Anyway.
Yep.
we'll get to that maybe later. Probably never. But there's a lot of talent here. Duke? So here, I mean, I haven't looked at like the hot takes yet, but Duke as a five, I know they were kind of like mid, but they've been killing it lately.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise, especially with the consistent Duke lug that the tourney selection committee seems to give them, right or wrong, warranted. There could be sometimes not, you know, depending what side of the Duke fandom people lie on with that. But like you said, they got it going late. Finally get healthy with everyone there. Derek healthy. Derek Lively looking a lot more like himself. The ball moving, and Jeremy Roach leading that group. So they just look fantastic. Win the ACC tournament. I understand the ACC was not the elite league that it typically is. So maybe that bumped them down a little bit. I thought, but with the ACC tournament win the way they've been playing, I thought they would get a top four seed, particularly on that four line. That's what I thought they would end up.
It'll be interesting. I don't know if I like all this like positive, good vibes, underdog shit that Duke has going on now. Everybody's like, oh, they're hot. JJ Redick is beloved now. Even I'm out here tweeting positive about him.
What a change.
Yeah, I know. It used to be fuck those guys. And then they started getting some players who I liked. And now it's just like, why would I? Like, it's not like they, you know, recruit like they used to. I mean, they still recruit well, obviously. But anyway, I just can't. Maybe I'm just getting old and washed, and I can't. Being a hater is a young man's game. So I might be past that point in my life. I don't know, man.
So out of that game, retired.
Exactly. Retired, yeah, that's how I should put it. I'll come out of retirement for, like, the Grizzlies and other annoying teams. Okay, so cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, who cooks. Just looking down the line at what other prospects are in the tournament. Terquavion Smith and NC State, he's in the tournament.
Kentucky. Yep, Kentucky committee, Arkansas with Ant Black, Nick Smith.
That's right.
Clowney, yeah.
Kansas State has a, you know, a couple of interesting prospects. Gonzaga, we mentioned UConn, Arkansas, Kansas. Yeah, there's a couple. Indiana with Jalen Huchefino and TJ Trace Jackson Davis. Iowa, of course, with Mr. Murray. So it should be pretty interesting. I always, you know, I guess we could start with this question. Like, one thing that is kind of a classic Rorschach test for amateur or professional draft people, I feel like, is how you incorporate conference tournaments and March Madness into how you look at these guys, right? Because hopefully they've already played like 20 games, which is not much in the larger scheme of things. And for a conference tournament and March Madness, even if you have deep runs, you're talking about like maybe 10 games or so, give or take. So like, is this like a proving ground for prospects to you, or more just, or just more boringly like, oh, there's more data points? Like,
I'm so glad you asked this question. It's actually what one I had written down in my notes. So I absolutely love it, because I'm going to ask you the same thing. For me, I take it with a grain of salt. It does not change too much of my draft projection for the different prospects, no matter what they're doing. If it's a strong run or poor run, it won't cause me to be like, Nick Smith has had a terrible, like, they know Arkansas and went one and done, whatever the case is. And, sorry, Arkansas fan, I'm not saying I want to wish that upon y'all. Let me backtrack a little bit there. But just to say, like, early exits and things of that nature really does not affect me too much. No one's going to be moving up 10 spots off of a good tournament run for me, or back 10 spots, because there may be a couple. But what I do like to see is just how are they handling the pressure of the big stage. That's the biggest thing for me. Have they ratcheted up their game? Have they looked small in the big moments? So those type of things that you kind of add to another data point there. That's something that you certainly want to look at during the NCAA tournament and these big moments where the national stage is on them.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how I look at it. Like, the data size for the whole college season is so small, and there's definitely sometimes some, like, for players who are playing in worse conferences, it's kind of cool to hopefully see them against out of conference talented schools. But even then, like, you still have to be careful, because you're talking only a couple of games. So while you can say somebody's like amazing at the rim in like a WAC conference, and then they come into this tournament and they're just getting their shit punched all over the place, like, it's easy to say, well, like, you know, maybe they can't hack it around the rim versus NBA type length or something. But
yeah,
it could just be a WAC game. It could just be a rough weekend, right? Could they be dinged up and playing? I don't know. It could be a zillion things. One thing I do look at, though, is for players who have, this is probably like the only like unique kind of thing I take from the tournament that I don't take from earlier in the season, which is for players who have had significant in-season development, I'm looking at whatever that X factor is. So like for Derek Whitehead at Duke, I'm like, okay, you know, he's finally getting his legs under him. There was a really good piece in The Athletic about his injuries and his recovery and how Duke is handling it and stuff like that, that came out, like, I think it came out like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And I forget, one of the guys they were talking to at Duke estimated that he was about 2 weeks from being 100%. And we're here now. So, like, I mean, in the conference tournament, he's definitely moving a little bit better. It's not like he was when he was skinnier and back in 2020, jumping from like the free throw line and shit. But
exactly,
especially on defense, he's definitely got a little pep in his step, which you love to see. Or somebody like his teammate Derek Lively, who you kind of alluded to it. He's coming to himself over the last month and a half, not scoring a ton or not hitting threes or anything, but just like controlling that defense and just dunking the crap out of it when he can and being assertive and stuff like that. So
exactly, just being him at the end of the day, that rim runner, that rim protector, and, you know, working pick and rolls. I'm glad he's gotten the more two-man actions with Tyrese Proctor, who's just fantastic working those. and be able to get him lobs and easy baskets. And like it's been great to see that from Lively this year for sure, you know, after a very rough start.
Yeah, exactly. So you love to see that. You know, Brandon Miller, right? He's obviously been playing great in the conference tournament up to their win. And we've seen him be better finishing at the rim, for example. Like, it's good to see. I don't feel like prospects need to have that, but when they do have that in-season development, I'm always kind of looking at that to see is that change real and something that, you know, changes their ceiling or their projection, or is it just more of a, you know, they got hot for a month, like any NBA player does at various points in their career or something like that. So it you know, to the extent that guys like, especially on the higher teams like Grady Dick or Keontae and their teams can advance, I'll be looking to see if there's anything new in their games. The two players I wanted to start out talking about are two players who are in the tournament, two players who are shooters. The Knicks desperately, desperately need shooting. They have a really good offense, but it's what I jokingly call on Twitter a grifter offense, because like all the other top 10 offenses are like 38% from three, 58 true shooting. And then the Knicks are just like 35% from three, 56 true shooting. And we shoot 100 times more than you because we get 1,000 offensive rebounds or whatever, which works for them. But
yeah, it'd be nice.
Exactly. It'd just be nice to plug in a bench shooter, because we know no rookie's going to come in here and like play starters minutes for Tibbs or something like that. But if they prove they're not a tire fire on one end, on defense and can hit shots, I think there's a pathway to minutes there for a future Knicks team, even one with Coach Tibbs. So I wanted to talk about Grady Dick and Jordan Hawkins, arguably the two best shooters in the class. I'm sure people can debate who's the top three or top five, but they might be number one and two for me personally. We can take it in whatever order you want, but I'm just curious about where you're at for those dudes, because I've actually seen them projected pretty all over the place. Like, some people I know are like Grady top 10, others are like Grady inside the lottery seems crazy, and I'm like, I don't even know where I stand. So give me the answers to the test, bro. What do you think?
I'm gonna try to give you a little something. For both of them, I have them both as lottery grades. With Grady Dick, let's kind of talk about both of them at the same time here, because I feel they both have similar strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, with the shooting, they have the movement shooting together, being able to space the floor. There's questions about how much juice they both have off the bounce to be able to score in one-on-one situations, and then also defensively as well. The stock numbers are pretty good for Grady Dick, 1.7 stocks, and he's a really good team defender. And at 6'8", you certainly want to take that size, and a knockdown shooter as well. I think he's right around 39% shooting this year from three. And he knows with that size and shooting, that's what the league is always looking for. That is always coveted. Size and shooting will get you paid, like that point blank period. It certainly will. And that's exactly what teams are going to be looking for out of Grady Dick and Hawkins. The biggest difference for me between the two is the height. I mean, Hawkins is 6'5", and you have Grady Dick at 6'8". And then kind of sneaking Jet into this discussion as well,
too. Oh, yeah.
He's at 6'8", as well, too. So they both have the height advantage over Hawkins, but I mean, you can arguably say you can go either way that you want to go with the shooting for all three of all fantastic shooters. But when you're looking for off the ball, the movement, you may want to go with the edge for Jordan Hawkins. I mean, it is an absolute task chasing that man around screens all game, and he's just sprinting off screens, pull up. I'm working handoffs. Going up, I mean, attacking closeouts. You just really have to be prepared for a track meet when you are chasing around Jordan Hawkins. Like, you really are in for a long day. And I think with all three of these guys, too, you can put them all in the playoff game right now, and they'll be able to get buckets because of their shooting, their ability to work off the ball. I really am curious to see where people end up with all three of them, simply because, like I said, they have so many similarities with their offensive game and their concern areas, if you will, with Hawkins, like I said, being the shorter one. Maybe that's kind of what pushed him a little bit away from the other two, possibly. But for me, if I had to pick any type of order right now, and it's changed throughout the season, I would have had Jet first. But right now, I'm going to go with Grady, Jordan Hawkins, and then Jet Howard. That would be my three for right now. But at the end of the day, if a team misses out on whichever order, they miss it out, let's say they missed on Grady Dick, I think they'll be almost, or if not just as happy as being able to get someone like Jet later or Jordan Hawkins later. So if you're looking for the shooting, someone that can come and do it right away, all three of those guys can do that for you.
They're all really interesting, and because they're all ridiculous shooters of different kinds, right? Like Grady is probably the toughest in the sense that he's like the tallest of the bunch and has a high release on top of that. Jet is probably the best shooting off combo dribbles and crazy moves and stuff like that. And then, like you said, Jordan runs off screens way more than the other ones. So they definitely each have like their strengths within the realm of shooting. And I think the Knicks in theory would be lucky to have any of them. What I wonder though is like, in terms of, we know you can put any of those three on the court and they'll be able to shoot, especially if they don't have to create their own shots as much. But for things like, all right, you're going to come in and play for Tibbs, you're going to need to like hit rotations, you're going to need to at least give some effort at the point of attack, right? Like box out your guy. Like in terms of those little things that add up, and obviously like they're little individually but large cumulatively, how would you rank those three? Because that's kind of what I'm struggling with. I'm looking at their shooters, right, and with those three being the top end shooters, and then below them some other players who are good shooters but maybe not great shooters, like Chris Murray types. You know, Chris is a great rebounder and he's obviously older than those guys and therefore a little bit more seasoned defensively. So, you know, it makes me wonder, like, is someone like Tibbs going to be in the Knicks war room talking about, even though he's not as good a shooter, give me Chris Murray because I know I could plug him in or whatever. But by the same token, like, we've seen him give guys like Deuce McBride and even quickly back when he was a rookie, strategic but small roles. So, like, and it's not a coincidence that those guys both did a lot of those little things and in theory could shoot. So how are you feeling about those guys doing the various little things?
I will put Grady at the top of that one. I mean, with his size, defensive playmaking, and effort, especially what he does as a team defender, be able to get in passing lanes. And at that size, you can switch a little bit. Obviously, teams will probably be welcome. Mm-hmm. To getting them on an island and switching, but at least you do have some size and effort. And for me, when it comes down to defense and guys who are mostly known for their offense, if you have good size and you give effort, I feel like teams generally can work with that because you have some switchability. There are some tools for you to work at, and you won't be a complete mismatch with your size, hopefully plus length, but at least decent length. And also just that general effort. So I would certainly put Grady at the top of that list from what I've seen. And really, there's been moments of that for Jet, especially when he's working through and navigating off-ball screens defensively. He probably has the most work to do, but then again, he's also 6'8". So you do kind of like his frame, what he can do.
Jordan Hawkins. And he's the youngest.
Exactly. And then real quick with, I don't want to go too far into a tangent here, but with Jet as well, like, I just love NBA bloodlines. So, and what I mean by that, both on and off the court, like, you know, with Juwan as his dad, like, he's fully prepared to play in the NBA mentally, on the court, off the court, understanding what his diet needs to be like, what it looks like off the court, the work ethic that's needed, the prep on and off, you know, all that type of stuff to just kind of ease that transition, both on and off the court, and being able to have someone like that who's gone through it at a high, high level. I really, really value those things. And for Jordan Hawkins, I feel like he's getting better defensively as far as just putting the effort in and working. When I got to see him play against Georgetown, last month, maybe a month and a half ago, they were pretty relentless about getting into his chest. He does have to get bigger. They're 6'5". I think he's – I don't want to misspeak. I'm not sure the exact weight listing for him. I'm pretty sure he's under 200 pounds. But they were just relentless about going into his chest. The effort was there for him, but he's certainly going to have to get stronger.
Before we continue this discussion, though, NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, and place a same-game parlay on any NBA game. And if it doesn't hit, you'll get a bonus bet back. Only app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA with code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Yeah, that physicality is definitely my biggest concern with Jet. And, you know, it manifests in his bad stock and rebound numbers, which are really bad. But you also see it in other things. Like, he has great touch and skill, so he can, you know, get into the lane and go to his floater and stuff. But sometimes I'm like, dude, you're going up against, like, teacher's assistants. Just, like, go through them or go over them or whatever. Exactly, right? Like, and he's skinny, but he's not, like, Bones Highland skinny either, so... Mm-hmm. He's got a little something to work with there, and it'll be interesting to see if whoever drafts him can, you know, make him tap into that. Like, I don't know, take some boxing classes or something. But one of the things I like about Jordan Hawkins is, even though he's smaller, he doesn't mind mixing it up. He can try to get pretty physical at the point of attack on defense, and then driving. Sometimes he's not afraid to, like, crash into dudes or play around and, like, draw contact in traffic and things like that. So, I don't know. I think in terms of little things, I don't think any of the three of them are bad, but mm-hmm. I would definitely put Grady at the top. The team defense thing for offense first prospects is, like, you hit it on the head. Like, I always think of, I don't know, this might anger some listeners who are members of CamFam. Cam is great. Cam Reddish is great at the point of attack, but, like, when he was playing for the Knicks, the problem was teams were like we would put Cam Reddish, we would hide Jalen Brunson, right? And then put Cam Reddish on a point guard, like John Morant or something. And he's do an admirable job, but teams realize, oh, Cam is on John Morant. I'm just going to set a screen at the 3-point line. And then it's like, okay, do you know how to rear view contest? If you're going to switch, do you know how to peel switch properly? Like, if you have to take somebody else and rotate, like, are you going to make that rotation? All of those things have nothing to do with, like, length at the point of attack. It's still involved. Being long still helps, and Cam would still sometimes be decent at those things, but more often than not, he'd just be a little unremarkable in that respect, which is why someone like Deuce, even though he's shorter, gives you that point of attack resistance, but also gives you all the other little things, which is why he was favored by Tibbs, unsurprisingly, as a bench guard. So that's something I don't know if it's, like, good that, like, so on the one hand, I'm like, yes, you want prospects who do the little things. But on the other hand, I'm like, I wish this Knicks front office was more open-minded to, like, pick guys who have upside on offense, but maybe they could teach that stuff. And that's the big question I have with Jet Howard. Because, I mean, we'll put aside his age. The Knicks have, since R.J. Barrett, have not taken an 18-year-old. Actually, I guess that's technically not true. They took Trevor Keels, who was, like, either just 19 or 18. But in the top 35 picks, they haven't taken a very young player like Jet in the Leon Rose tenure. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's necessarily they have anything against young players. I just think they prefer a little bit of a track record, and they're probably a little risk averse in that way. But I mean, the way shit is going for Dallas, whose pick they have, like, we might be picking 13, 14, 15. So, like, they're going to have to seriously consider players who are barely 19, right? Like,
yep.
Like, Anthony Black, if his night is on draft night, is going to be a month over 19. Grady Dick is going to be 2 or 3 months over 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Keontae George, he probably won't be there when the Knicks pick, but like a little over 19. Derek, he will not be 19. He'll be 18 and a half.
Yep.
Cason Wallace from Kentucky. I don't think the Knicks will pick him, but again, 19. So there's just like a lot of young players. And Jet is going to be, he's not like Derek Young, 18 and a half on draft night, on draft day. Jet will be 19 and a half. So they might be able to work with that, but it'll just be really interesting to see which shooter they pick, if they pick a shooter, given all of those considerations. Another guy I wanted to ask you about, who's maybe a shooter but not yet a shooter, is Noah Clowney, who you mentioned as someone you're interested in. I know he interests Knicks fans a lot because aside from shooting, the thing the Knicks are pretty glaringly missing is, aside from Julius Randle, we don't really have any like rangy long guys. And even Julius isn't really rangy or long. He's just jacked and really fast. Yeah. And Obi Toppin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obi Toppin's long, but he's not like rangy on defense. He saves all of that good stuff for offense for the most part. So Noah Clowney, I mean, nobody's going to confuse him for some ball handling small forward, but he's young. He's part of a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
Great advanced stats. The stats kind of ebb and flow. How do you feel about him?
I do like him. I'm not sure if I like him first round quite yet. He's on the cusp of that for me. He's in that late first round, early second round grade.
Mm-hmm.
But what the NBA is looking for, long, rangy centers who can protect the rim and potentially stretch the floor. I think he's shooting. He's definitely under 30%. I believe he's at 27%. Yeah, 27% mm-hmm. on just about 3.5 attempts per game, which I do like that the value is getting there. But for him, the main thing is continuing to get stronger, being able to find more of a consistent shot, and just really being a play finisher. And I think those are what teams are really want to continue to see from him. And once he gets to work out in that pre-draft process, assuming that he does declare it, even just to get feedback, shooting the ball and workouts is going to be critical for him. But if he was doing that low 30s, if he was more of a proven shooter at this point, I think he'd be a guaranteed first rounder.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. And to me, I mean, I know the Knicks aren't going to do this because, again, they just rarely take players this young. But, like, you can teach shooting to some extent. As long as you're not starting from, like, the worst shot ever, you can probably teach, like, catch-and-shoot shooting. And his shot, like, it's not busted. It just doesn't go in. He's probably pretty inconsistent. So if I'm an NBA, especially an NBA team with multiple picks that is closer to rebuilding than I am to contending, you know, a team like the Pacers or something, I'm definitely willing to reach for someone like Clowney with the hopes that, you know, you can polish the shot and get him pro fitness sessions and a chef and all that good stuff. Yep. And you get the payoff in a couple of years when someone like Tyrese Halliburton is closer to their prime. Are there any other players in that, like, 12 to that big glock? Because for me, it's like once you get to roughly 12, give or take, then it's like a free-for-all. Like, I don't know who's going to go when. It could be Cason Wallace and Bryce Sensabaugh and Derek Whitehead could go 12, 13, 14, or they could go 17, 18, 19. Like, I have no idea how this thing is going to shake out.
Let's talk about Derek for a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk about him in bits and pieces throughout the pod already, but you're right about he could go in the lottery. He could go late first round. It's a pretty big range for him. But if the athleticism comes back, which I feel like it will, we saw what happened with AJ Griffin last year, and just in general the way that modern medicine is and the way that these guys attack rehab and, you know, just so precise with the rehab and usually come back as athletic, you know, as they were before or even better. So just I think if teams feel good about his medicals, they're going to get a guaranteed lottery talent, possibly top 10 talents. The way he's been shooting the ball, he's been very confident. He's defending. I think he's legitimate. So he's in that 6'6 range. Strong. It looks like he had just from – I only saw him play in person once at UVA. But it looked like he is a little bigger than probably where he wants to be. Not to say that he's chunky or anything like that. I might not want to go that far, but probably just not at the playing weight that he wants to be, which makes sense coming off the injury. And I'm still trying to work his way back, which looks like he's almost there. But if that athleticism comes back, like I think that it will, I think he is a bona fide top 10 pick in the draft.
One thing that I've gone through several phases with Derek. At first, I was like, like all the high school footage, like roll the dice, dudes, like go for the upside. But then I like really sat. I did a quick one of those air videos that's like 2 minutes long, just basically literally comparing dunks from early this year, from his senior year and his junior year. And you can just see like the hops decrease each time because of the combination of bulking up intentionally, like to get stronger, like, you know, like any teenager, and also just all those lower body injuries. And it was rough, man. He had some like bad missed dunks and stuff like that early in the year. But I hadn't actually, I mean, I would throw, like sometimes Duke would be on TV because they're Duke and I would watch it, but I didn't really lock in until recently because I knew I'm not spending as much time scouting probably as a lot of our good friends on Draft Twitter, definitely not as much as you, because I pretty much do this for fun on my couch in my free time. And I was like, all right, if I know I'm waiting for Derek to get healthy and I want to watch him play defense like full games, I'm going to wait till later this season to get my to do my Duke deep dive. So I've been checking him out during the conference tournament, and I was kind of surprised at how spry he is on defense. Like the vertical pop on offense, that's still a ways away, but like I don't know. I'm maybe it's because I watched too much fucking RJ Barrett, but like I'm used to these jacked dudes just not being able to slide their feet like that. And he's more than capable. He's like legit like agile out there on defense, which is you know, that's the kind of stuff you want to see from an 18-year-old, because the schematic stuff, and not to say he's bad at the help defense stuff, he's actually pretty good at that for an 18-year-old, but just like his whole defensive package as a prospect, like I kind of just go into looking at wings and assume that like I put them into two buckets, theoretically good on, or three buckets, just probably going to be bad at defense, theoretically could be good on defense because they have the tools, and then the rare, like, okay, they're already actually good at defense. And I feel like he's kind of already good at defense, which leads me to the next logical question, which is like, okay, if he's already good at defense and the shot making, you know, maybe that takes a while to come back, maybe it never comes back, but he's already a really good three-point shooter, just like role player threes, right? Like, isn't this the kind of young player who Tibbs might be like, oh, we'll throw you 10 minutes a game. You could play with IQ and Josh Hart and these guys and just run and gun and use your energy and play defense. And, you know, because normally, like I said, we haven't drafted an 18-year-old, but I'd be looking at Derek wondering, like, is he gonna break the curse, the streak? I don't know.
Yeah, I do like that fit for the Knicks for sure. There's a lot of different ways they can go. If you look for someone with defense and the shooting there outside of the guy, you know, like Grady Dick, how we mentioned there, but Derek will be a hell of a fit there.
I don't know. He's gotten mocked to the Knicks a lot because, you know, people. We'll see if the Duke run impacts all of their stock, but I think he might benefit from that. That shit always happens to someone I want on the Knicks. They start killing it in the tournament or something. God damn it. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with Derek. At first I was just like, I'm just too scared. Like, I don't know. I don't want to pick anybody whose injury history can result in this draft pick being like a net zero. Like, I'm just not about that life. But obviously, like, the real life Knicks front office would have the medicals and much more information than I have here from my fucking laptop or whatever. So, some other guys, just looking at the other guys around who might be around that part of the class and are shooters or shooter-ish, you got guys like Taylor Hendricks, who's fast rising. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, he's not gonna fall to the Knicks because he's so young. And like you said, size and shooting, right? Like, that's the name of the game these days. And it's pretty much Grady Dick in terms of like shooters who are above 6'7". It's like Grady Dick, Brandon Miller, obviously Wembanyama, but like, he's in his own category. And then pretty much like Taylor Hendricks, like Kyle Filipowski can shoot, but it's a little bit more theoretical. Jet Howard, maybe if he unbraids his hair and then he's 6'9" with the hair, then you can kind of include him. That's really it, though. There's not a lot of tall shooters because that's pretty hard to do. And that, you know, I'm on Tankathon right here, and they haven't updated their shit because he's like 23rd. And so him and Max Lewis and Kyle Filipowski, those are three taller kind of shooters who I'm wondering, like, could they come in and just be floor spacers who do some of those little things? I don't know how much you've got to watch those guys, but curious if you have any thoughts about them.
Well, actually, the conversation on Flip, that brings me a little bit to a philosophy conversation that I want to have. Maybe it's a little side tangent, if you don't mind. Let's do it. We DM'd a little bit about this. Let me see if I can find the best way to explain it. But essentially, I'm looking for, kind of in projecting shooting, what is kind of the lowest threshold of three-point percentage mixed in with shot-making versatility that still keeps that gravity for you out on the floor? And kind of what made me think about it was Kyle Filipowski and Mike Miles as well. And just looking at the numbers for both. So last year, Mike Miles shot 29% from three on 4.7 attempts last season. And in his career, he's at 33%. And moving to Flip is 29% this season. And then per Cerebro Sports, excellent database. I can't suggest and recommend them
anymore. Shout out Cerebro.
Shout out to all of them doing fantastic work and moving the game forward. I really appreciate what they're doing. Through 45 games for Flip, that's measured there, he's shooting 30% on 140 attempts. And I say this to say, I watched Kuminga play last week against the Lakers, and he's shooting 34%. Sorry for all the numbers. I'll tie it in at the end. But 34% this season on 2.1 attempts. And the Lakers were backing off on Mikey's Russ. They were giving him the shot. That's at 34%. I know there were shot-making and shooting concerns with him coming out of the draft. Like, he shot 24% with the G League Ignite, and he's obviously improved that. But it's not it's not improved enough for teams to truly respect him and run him off the line or give him that type of gravity. So I say that all to say, what is it because of the different shot making? Is it the confidence? Because Mike Miles, just watching him, the motion, the shooting, the confidence, shot making versatility, the step backs, pull ups, pick and roll. He's going to get a lot more gravity, even if he's shooting under 30% than Kuminga will, based off of that versatility, that shot making, and that confidence. Is there, is, you think it just varies from person to person? Is there a low threshold that is just too low to project for someone to still have that type of gravity? No, it's a long-winded type of question and response within it.
Nah, that's a good question. And it's actually something Knicks fans have talked a lot about, because over the Tibbs tenure, we've modernized our shot profile more and more each year. And now if you look at the Knicks, they probably have a top 10, like Morey Ball type profile. And we've come a long way from the days of, you know, Elfrid Payton and Bobby Portis, even before Bobby Portis became like nice too, when he was busy trying to do like jump hooks every possession and shit like that. And, and you know, so like, I think it really comes down to volume. And like tucked into the onion of volume, if you unpeel the layers, is like, okay, who's going to get volume, right? Like if you're a ball handler, it's a lot easier to get volume. So, you know, you think of somebody like Mike Miles, right? He's been the point guard pretty much everywhere he goes. He was on Team USA with a bunch of hoopers and he was still like, bitch, this is Mike Miles' team. Like y'all going to have to deal with it. And it worked because he's Mike Miles and he's really good. And, you know, just looking at the Knicks now, like it's, we see this with Julius, he's taking 11.5 threes per 100, which is like a mind boggling number for Julius Randle wrecking ball power forward. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Cause he, even if he's only shooting 34-35%, that means you're still going to have games where he's a threat and he hits two in the first quarter, ends up the game with like, he's had numerous games with five threes and stuff like that. You know, we all got these jokes off during the 3-point shootout, but like the fact of the matter is if you're a ball handler, whether you're a traditional ball handler like Mike Miles or somebody like Marcus Smart, right, who's never been a particularly great 3-point shooter, but he has the ball so he can put them up. Or Spencer Dinwiddie's another one. I know he had a great shooting year before the trade. But historically, he's not a particularly good 3-point shooter, but dude definitely puts it up. And on some level, you have to discipline teams might be like, all right, Spencer Dinwiddie, like put up as many as you want. But it's just trickier. So if you're not a ball handler and you need and you're putting up significant volume, that means you're looking to put them up. Like you're not shy. I'm thinking of guys like Grady Murray, Jordan Hawkins, on the Knicks, Quentin Grimes, although even he's like become a little more tame because he likes putting it on the deck and driving because he's really athletic, so he could do that. But so for someone like Kuminga, it's tough because he doesn't have the offensive ball handler gravity like a Mike Miles or a Dinwiddie or a Julius Randle. And he doesn't have the off ball, like, you better watch out. Doesn't matter what my percentages say. I'm about to put him up. Like, you know, some of these other guys like Grady Dick or whoever, you know, just can pick a random, like Jay Crowder is a great example, like in the NBA. Like, he's never been a particularly awesome shooter, but he knows in his role he has to put them up. And he does a decent job doing that. And nobody's going to confuse Jay Crowder with, you know, JJ Redick or something, but like you can't ignore Jay Crowder. Like you might not stick with him like he's, you know, prime Richard Hamilton, but yep. it's not like Kuminga where they're like, okay, go ahead and shoot it. Like, yeah, have fun with that. So, exactly. And where does somebody like Flip fall into that is interesting because in college, like the shooting is the curveball for him, right? Like he can just dominate you with 2-point shots because he's bigger, stronger, faster, and more skilled than like everybody he comes against. And, you know, he hasn't been a good 3-point shooter this season, but he takes them. Mm-hmm. And when he's off ball, like, I feel like they don't leave him wide open because he's their best offensive player, right? Like, you have to know where he is. Just so the question for me is with someone like him is, at least, especially earlier in his career, like, he's not going to be the best offensive player. So, our team's going to dare him to shoot? In which case, is he going to be more judicious like Kuminga? Or is he going to be like, yeah, you dare me? I dare you to dare me. Like, I'm going to put them up. Like, and based on more of a hunch than data, he just seems like the kind of player who I think will make defenses pay in a way that even someone like Kuminga, who's come a long way in terms of his shooting, but still has a long way to go. So it'll be interesting with Flip, especially because I don't think he's going to play the center like he does sometimes. But, you know, he plays with Lively too, so he's not like always the center. So I think he could come in and I don't know. I'm kind of high. He's just such a fascinating, weird player. He's like a big with like wing like stock numbers. But he's not a good shooter, but he kind of is, and he's not afraid to shoot it. So I don't know. You could do a lot of things with him, and I hope he doesn't end up on a team that is kind of boring in their development, like the Hawks or something, just because if he's on the Hawks or even if he's on the Knicks, they're going to be like, all right, dude, stay in the corner, wait for Trey or Jalen Brunson or Julius to pass you the ball, go get offensive rebounds after that. Please hit all your rotations or else your coach will bench you immediately. Like, you know, like boring. I want like some creativity. So it'll be interesting. It's definitely a great question. And, you know, it applies to a couple of the other guys we talked about, right? Like Noah Clowney, for example.
Yep.
Like, he's taking more threes than I expected him to take, but it's going to be key that even as he develops, he still just puts them up. You know, although, and I'm just like spiraling into a tangent of your tangent, but like, I look at somebody like Walker Kessler in Utah, they're like, no, you're not taking no fucking threes right now. Like, just play defense and then you'll shoot threes later. And I guess I can understand that because he's the center. But, and someone like Flip, to the extent that he's not playing center, I doubt that'll happen. I doubt some team is going to be like, no, like, protect the rim and shoot big man shots or something like that. So he should be fine, but it'll be interesting.
Exactly. Like you said, with the size and skill that he has, it's a lot of different things that teams can do with him. The passing that he's shown, running DHOs, you know, short rolls, horn sets, a lot of different things that they can do to get him out in space against other fives or other bigs, however he's matched up, to get him in advantageous situations for himself and his teammates as well. And then, like you said, even if he – the hunch you said, I think a lot has to do with the eye test. You know, you see how confident he is shooting. You've seen him be able to make shots, what the motion looks like. And, you know, all those type of things, I would certainly trust. He may not end up being a, you know, high 30s, maybe not even mid-30s three-point shooter. But I would feel pretty good about him in that low 30s on maybe three attempts per game, maybe somewhere around there. And the fact that he is a shot maker, too, even if he doesn't end up being like the pure shooter we hope he would be as a big, but he is a legitimate perimeter shot maker that teams have to respect and keep honest because he can hit those shots and he's confident in it.
Yeah, that's to me what separates him from like Kalel Ware or a slightly deeper cut, but like Tristan Vukovic, who's hooping in Spain. You know, Vukovic is another, he's a power forward slash center, 6'10", also very young, or not very, he's like a little older than Flip, and his stats are crazy. Like, if you look at his like international stats playing in Spain, like he's very good, 38% from three, like high 70s from free throw, and he looks like he could shoot it, but he's not a shot maker. And I think the fact that you see Flip take those like mid-range shots and like they go to Flip in the middle of the zone to zone bust, right? Because of his passing and his little mid-range shot. That's a level of confidence in the shooting that I think, to me, I probably value a little bit more than just percentages alone. Although, of course, percentages matter. So I don't know where he's going to end up on my board. Definitely inside the top 20, though. He's one of those guys who I wish kind of fit on the Knicks, but unless we draft him to replace Obi, which is entirely possible, you know, Obi's probably on his way out, unfortunately. I just don't think the Knicks are going to draft another like large power forward type, maybe like a, if they draft a power forward, it's going to be somebody who's a little more light on their feet, mm-hmm. like a Taylor Hendricks type, or I don't even know who else fits that bill. There's not that many power forward. Chris Murray's a good example. Like, Chris Murray's a power forward, but he can move and groove a little bit. So we'll see what happens there. Actually, I did wanted to ask you about Chris too, because, you know, with his brother in the league, obviously they're not the same player. I think Keegan has emerged as a super duper shooter in his own right. Chris is a really good shooter, but not like that. But like, where are you at on Chris? Because I go back and forth. On the one hand, I'm like, okay, he's versatile. He can shoot. There's not much size with shooting in this draft. So that's what the Knicks are looking for, right? Like, someone to be tall and shoot and then also do the little things. Chris seems like he could do all that. But at the same time, I'm like, he's about to be 22 and a half. Like, where would these other 18 and 19-year-olds be in 2 or 3 years? Probably really good. So is this if the Knicks take Chris, is that a bit of a short-term, maybe counterproductive in the long term? I don't know. Like, I go back and forth with whether I would be very happy with Chris on the Knicks, disappointed with Chris on the Knicks, or just begrudgingly like, this is fine. He will fit in well, like very sanitized, like a math equation. Like, he's just plugging in and it'll be, and that's fine. That's all we need him to do, right? So what do you think of Chris?
I really do like him. Like, you hit on the head, size and shooting. My only thing is, I want to see how good of a shooter is he really? Because he's shooting 33% this year on about six and a half attempts, after shooting 38% last year, you know, on 3.2 attempts. So I think him proving what type of shooter that he really is, he showed a little bit of scoring versatility. He's up there just a little over 20 points per game too. But I think that's going to be key. Shoot the ball well in workouts. And also show that that's going to continue to translate as well. Because if he is like that 33%, low 30% shooter, I'm moving more to that around. You know what I mean? Like, if he's up in the upper 30s, then I would feel more about him in that low first round. Because, you know, it would be a theme, I'm sure, like we said many times. But just that size and shooting, you know, it's very tough to beat that. Especially for someone, he's like him, who's poised, he has a strong basketball IQ, he'll do the little things, just has a good feel, and you can see him slide into a rotation for a very long time. But that shooting just has to, just at the end of the day, prove that he is a legitimate shooter.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was so low. Like, I actually thought it was a little bit higher, and I just, while you were dropping those gems, I pulled up on one cool thing you can do on barttorvik.com is, if you look up an individual player's page on here, you can look at a given statistical category and like how it is across this season. So like, if it's the same or if it's gone up or down or whatever. And with him, you can see it's kind of trended a little bit down since the beginning of the season. Not by much, but enough that it makes you think. And then, the next thing I looked at, it was like, okay, let's look at his 3-point percentage. They have overall conference games versus top 100 and versus top 50 quality games. So like, you know, teams that are top 100 level, according to their statistics. So overall 34% conference games, which is 19 of the 28 games he's played, 33%, so basically the same. Top 100, which is 22 games, 31%. And then top 50, which is 12 games, 31%. And, you know, we have data from last year as well, which is a little bit better. But it is interesting, like, just watching him, they do run him off some like some movement and give him some difficult threes. So on the one hand, I'm like, his numbers are probably low in part because he's taking quite a lot and some of them are hard. But I do wonder, like, is he a good enough shooter that he's going to get some variety of threes at the NBA, or is it just going to be more your staple catch and shoot, right? Like, especially on a team like the Knicks, where like, it's not that creative. Like, Even Quentin Grimes is mostly taken pretty straightforward. It's either off the catch or one or two dribbles. And, you know, nobody's shooting off movement. I hope if they take someone like Jordan Hawkins, then they'll incorporate some movement. But for everyone else, I'm like, all right, like on the one hand, Chris might not be some great shooter. But on the other hand, maybe his shooting diet actually gets easier in the NBA when he's not the main guy on the scouting report and he's not having to shoot off movement. So I think on the whole, I'm probably like, I don't know. He's definitely not a shooter on the level of the other guys we've talked about, but I don't think he's a non-shooter, but there's enough there that I'd be a little shook if we took him. I'd be optimistic and I'd push my agenda on Twitter about how great he'll be immediately. But
in the back of my head,
I'd be a little worried, a little shook.
I think you hit the head on so many gems that you just said, and that you have to really look at the shots that he is taking. And then the big part of I look at scouting, I look at it as an IEP, like from it's kind of known as the individualized education plan. It's kind of what it's known as, but I look at it as an individualized scouting plan. And for me, IEP is identify, evaluate, and project. And, you know, Buff, you know, TV5 Sports does a terrific job. He's talking about very similar stuff, and that's how I look at it as well. And this projection part, you know, it's going to be pretty much completely different for someone like Chris Murray. Like you said, he's not going to go and run around all these pin downs. I just don't see, at least right away. It may be more off of catch and shoots, relocations, maybe a little pick and pop action, those type of things, to where he's not taking as many difficult shots. And the volume may not necessarily be there. So that number could be in that upper 37%. So that kind of changes. You like still have that shot versatility there, have him running off the screens and whatnot. But if he is that reliable spacer off of catch and shoots, especially working off the penetration of guys and he's shooting open threes and he's hitting those at a high clip, that's something that you want to see and that you feel good about.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're helping me come to terms a little bit with it. So I think I'd still be cool if we took him. But if Dallas keeps on stinking up the joint and our pick is like closer to 12 than closer to 18, then I'll probably – if we pick Chris, that means we probably passed on some players I really, really like. So
Exactly.
You know, it's like what happened with Obi. Like Obi's – I was actually low on Obi, and he's a lot better than I expected, even though he's just had a lot of misfortune and his usage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they drafted him, they didn't think Randall was going to be here. So it was just a perfect storm of the wrong coach for him and the wrong roster for him. And – but he was easy to root for, and he got better at stuff, right? Like, his defense has improved vastly, and his shooting is – I mean, he's not a sniper, but his shooting is a lot better than it used to be. So if we had Chris, I would definitely – just from him being tall alone, like, that's going to have value for a team like the Knicks. So it's always easy to think about upside and – forget about like, okay, what's the floor, right? What's the downside? And someone like him, I could see why the Knicks front office might just be like, yeah, just keep it simple. He's really good. You know he's gonna be good. There's like little risk of this blowing up in your face. We got a good thing going here with this our top eight, right? We already got plenty of young players. Just swing for the single here. Don't swing for the home run. So it'll be interesting. Jam, sir, thank you for joining us. We hit the hour mark, so that means we got a lot of good content for the good folks listening here, whether it's on Spotify or YouTube or whatever other apps. I don't know. I'm old and washed, but I'm sure people will appreciate you being on here, and definitely not the last time. Real quick, you want to tell folks where they can find you, and if you have anything coming out or anything else that you want to just give a plug for, definitely go for that.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. First of all, for having me on, it's a pleasure and honor to come on here, and looking forward to coming back soon. If you want to follow my work on Twitter, that's Jam on the Boards. And also I'm doing stuff with Draft Digest. We're really going to start to ramp it up with the tournament here and we get into that pre-draft process. I recently wrote about Benny Williams and his ACC tournament game, what that looked like moving forward for him. It was one of his best games of the season. Also working on the G.G. Jackson piece that I'm excited about his off-ball upside. A lot of his upside gets talked about and is tied into his on-ball work. So I wanted to dive into his off-ball work and things that I like from him. And then I'm also working on something about Drew Peterson. He's one of my sleeper prospects in the draft. He's 6'9", versatile, ball skills, fits right into the modern NBA. So I'm excited to pump those out, continue to dive deep in those and get those out soon.
I'm excited to learn about Drew Peterson because 6'9", versatile. That checks a lot of boxes for the Knicks. So I might have to stop sleeping on him. I don't know anything about him. So that'll be interesting. And maybe next time you're on, we can talk about him and some other sleepers, and we'll have a better idea of hopefully where the Knicks are going to pick. People, you heard the man. Throw him a follow at Jam on the Boards. You can find me at _Presidente as usual. You can find us on Spotify and also on YouTube, where I will now be posting whenever I feel like it. I don't know if that's every other week or not. Some video stuff that's a little too long for Twitter, but that I felt like throwing on the internet for people to check out. So stay tuned for some bonus Draft Strickland content, people. And that is all for our show for today. And we will see you next time for March Madness.
The New York Knicks select.